Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
You're welcome back. John Giles is on the line as always on this time of a Thursday. Evening, John.
Evening, Nathan.
It's been quite a week in the Champions League. Before we get to that, we've just actually been talking for the last half an hour about some of the scraps that we see in football and some of the behaviour that maybe isn't there anymore. There's been a video on Twitter going around this week of the semi-final from 75 between Leeds and Barcelona. 7-8 minutes of some of the strongest tackles I think I've ever seen in football, and everybody gets up and everybody keeps on playing. Do you remember much about that game?
I remember it well. We beat them 2-1 at Leeds and drew in Barcelona, Nathan. I don't remember it being that tough, actually.
I'll send you on this video.
In those days. But there was no diving, Nathan.
No, well, there certainly wasn't any diving. You couldn't get away quick enough to dive in those days, I think. I was thinking there was about 7 or 8 tackles that would have Sky Sports talking about them for a week.
Yeah, that's about right. But Cruyff played in that match.
Mm.
Well, they were obviously a top team at that particular time, you know.
How good was he over the two games?
He didn't play all that well. He played on the left wing, Nathan, and he was depending on to get the ball out to him a lot, and he didn't do that. And he also playing against Paul Rini, who was a very good man marker, but he didn't play as well in the matches as you would have expected him to. He was a great player, as we know.
Teams obviously were well able to give it and to take it back in those days. Were there certain games that really do stand out where it got completely out of hand?
Oh, I think the final of... We played Chelsea, I think, in 1970. We played at Wembley where it was a mud heap. They had the horse show on it a few weeks beforehand. And it went to a replay at Old Trafford. And the replay at Old Trafford was very, very tough, Nathan. If you ever get a chance to pull tackle, if you want to see bad tackles, pull out the replay at Old Trafford.
That was Chelsea won it after extra time.
Yes.
Right, yeah. I think we'll have a look at the YouTube video. We might tweet it out a little bit later this evening. Yeah. Getting on then to modern and times and this week, one of the most incredible weeks I think we've ever seen in the Champions League with the comeback from Roma, with the potential almost comeback from Juventus, and Liverpool managing to see off Manchester City. We might start with last night then. Real Madrid through to the semi-finals just about with that 94th minute penalty.
Yeah.
Was it a penalty?
I thought it was, Nathan. Again, what a lot of people say, if that had been around the middle of the pitch or outside the box, it was a definite penalty. I thought it was. You know, the Juventus defender tried to get at it when he had no chance to get. I thought it was a penalty, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Funny enough, I heard Buffon talk, and he was more... But what he was saying, in effect, was that we put up a great performance and it's unfair for us to be losing a match like this. But that wasn't the case. I mean, the referee has to do what he has to do, and I thought he did it well. I thought it was a penalty, definitely.
Yeah, because a lot of the fallout has been dominated as well by the red card to Buffon. Had Michael Oliver any other choice but to send him off?
No. I think one or two others could have been sent off for the way they got around him. And I mean, Buffon was into his face, as you could see, Nathan. I don't think he had any choice in that. And I thought the referee did well. Kept his head well. And I think he gave the penalty as he saw it. And I think he had the courage to do it.
Do you attach any blame then for Buffon for the way he reacted? Or is it just 94th minute? It's a European semi-final. The passion takes over. The anger takes over. You just lose the run of yourself completely.
I think that's what happened. Because it was him that made a statement afterwards saying, you know, it was disgraceful because they played so well and it was the last minute or they were into injury time. He didn't actually say whether it was a penalty. He deserved to be a penalty or not.
Mm.
And then to be sent off. I mean, if you saw, well, we all saw, I'm sure you were watching as well, Nathan. It was in the referee's face straight away. Really, really very, very aggressive. I think the referee had no option but to send him off.
It was quite a penalty then from Cristiano Ronaldo. Oh. It felt as though he did everything right. He stayed away from the row. He took a deep breath. He kept himself composed.
Well, if you wanted one man to be in that position at that time, it would be him. I think he thrives. I think he thrives under pressure and to be able to show off as well in those particular situations, Nathan. And it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, where he put it, the goalkeeper was never going to get it. And the pace behind it as well. Because normally when you're knocking in penalties in on that side and that way with the inside of the foot, you don't usually get the power behind it as well. So it was actually a perfect penalty.
Yeah, supreme confidence to take that on, because generally players...
If you're picking anybody in the world to take it in that situation, you'd pick him. Now, the pressure there wouldn't bother him. I think he thrives on that.
Yeah, do players generally shy away from putting that much power behind it, because you can one little slip and you end up skying it?
Yeah, well it's a huge pressure penalty. We've seen plenty of things in the past where it gets to that situation. The normal penalty takers are not that keen to take it because there's so much at stake, but no bother to him.
We've raved about Real Madrid at times over the last couple of years. They've won three of the last four Champions Leagues. Last night, with the exception of Sergio Ramos, they had more or less their first choice starting 11 out. To find themselves 3-0 down, what did Juventus do to get at Real Madrid that Madrid just couldn't cope with?
Well, I think first of all, Real Madrid were a bit lackadaisical. I think their attitude was, we're 3-0 up. What was it? 3-0 up from the first leg. They felt it was a bit of a stroll, Nathan and myself. And what happens again? It's like, you often heard me talk about the away attitude and the home attitude, which I think is a bit of a nonsense in many ways. Juventus knew they had to win this match, and they approached it in a way that nothing to lose, let's have a go. And they caught Real Madrid on the hop. Now, if Juventus had been winning 3-0 from the first leg, Nathan, there's no way they would have approached that match the way they did. And they were excellent. What they did was excellent. Actually, when they got to 3, I think they stopped playing. I think they were quite happy when they got to the 3-0. They lost that will to go and really finish it off, in my opinion. But they were excellent in what they did. But it shows you their mentality and what you can do when you approach it in the right way. They had nothing to lose, so we'll have a go. And they definitely caught Real Madrid in the hop. I think Real Madrid were surprised at the way they played, that Juventus were as good as they were, and I think they were very, very slack themselves in their approach to the game.
Did they find a way to get at Luka Modric?
Well, I thought Modric played quite well. I was very surprised when he was taken off. And I don't know whether he has an injury or whatever, but he's the last player I would have taken off for Real Madrid. He didn't play very well last night, but neither did any of the team, Nathan. I think they were slow, they weren't up for it, and I think they did definitely take it for granted that this was going to be an easy win for them.
Gareth Bale was one of those who really struggled, taken off at half-time. And a lot of question marks again about his future in England. He's 29 in the summer. Do you worry about Bale in these latter stages of his career, in the second part of his career, that he may struggle to get up to the heights he got to during his time at Spurs in those first couple of seasons at Madrid?
Well, I don't think... Zidane favours him that much. I mean, he takes him off, he hasn't played him. His confidence couldn't be high, Nathan, because when you know that the manager doesn't really want you to, doesn't play in, that it's not very, very easy. And, he walked into a match last night where the whole team wasn't playing well. So I think he was a bit unlucky in that way. I mean, he's a very, very good player, as we know. But I always think with Bale, he needs plenty of room, he needs plenty of space to run and use his pace. He's not a natural footballer, in terms of getting the ball into his feet and holding it up and that. So you have to wait for him to get into positions to do what he's really good at. And obviously, Zidane doesn't want to wait. If he's not playing him, it means that he doesn't fancy him to have him in the team. And that doesn't do anybody... When Annie Bale or anybody else, the confidence is can be shattered, Nathan, in that situation.
Whether it's Liverpool or Bayern Munich or Roma who get Real Madrid in the semi-finals, did Juventus set an example last night of how you get at Real Madrid, of how you can go and beat them? Or is it more a case, as you say, that actually Madrid were a little bit complacent perhaps, just weren't at 100%, and that when they are at 100%, they're still almost unstoppable?
I think they're favourites, Nathan. This was a shock result. It could have been a shock result last night. They got away with it. And that's a lesson, coming up to the semi-final, that there's no way that should happen to them again, regardless of who they draw in the semi-finals. They got out of jail last night. There's no doubt about that. That was a shock. They could have gone out. They didn't. They're still in there. And I think that's a big lesson for them to learn in this particular competition now. I don't think they'll make the same mistake again.
What did you make then of Barcelona on Tuesday night? Another absolute shock the way Roma managed to turn it around.
Well, I didn't see that match, Nathan, but they could have been complacent as well. You know, they were 4-1 up from the first leg. Again, it shows you the attitude, what you can do when you have to do it. In Roma's case, if Roma had been 2 up, I'm sure they wouldn't have played the way they did and caught them on the hop. But I think what's significant this year from the Spanish point of view, Real Madrid are not doing very well and playing very well in La Liga. Whereas Barcelona, I think most people would agree, even before last night, they're not quite the force that they have been in previous years. And that proved to be the case for both of them. You know, now whether Madrid pick it up, and I think they do have the players to pick it up for the semi, I would put them favourites to win it. But they're not the Real Madrid that we've seen in previous seasons, and certainly Barcelona haven't been the team that we've seen in previous seasons, and they paid a price for it last night.
So, Roma, Juventus, did they pay too much respect to Barcelona and Real Madrid in the first legs of their quarterfinals? And does that make it all the more impressive what Liverpool achieved against Manchester City and the way they really got at City in their first leg and attacked them and ultimately won the tie in that first leg?
Yeah, well, on the Real Madrid thing, I watched the first match against Juventus away, and I thought Juventus played well in the match, Nathan, but the big difference was Ronaldo. Ronaldo scored 2 fantastic goals. I mean, if Ronaldo had been playing for Juventus, the result could have been the opposite. Though they weren't totally outplayed in what was a 3-0 match. Mm. I thought they played quite well. Now, I didn't expect them to play as well in Madrid, I must say. No way. I mean, they picked it up brilliantly. Madrid weren't up for it, and they took advantage of it. That's the way I would read that particular tie over the two matches. The Manchester City-Liverpool one was a different thing altogether. You know, if you go back to the Liverpool match, you know, Manchester City didn't turn up at all. They were terrible, and Liverpool took full advantage of it, good luck to them, and finished up 3-0. But in the second match, then you saw Manchester City mostly at their best in the first half and could have gone 3-0 up. You know, Silva hit the upright, and then it turned out that the goal that was disallowed should have stood. You would have had a different game altogether. But in the second half, then they couldn't, I don't think it could keep up the pressure that they put in Liverpool, and Liverpool got at them. And once you get at Manchester City, then they're in trouble, as we saw, and Liverpool won 2-1, as we know. But 5-1 over the two legs, they definitely deserved it, Liverpool.
The performances then over the past week or so from Manchester City, the loss in the first leg, the way Manchester United were able to turn it around in the second half, and City not being able to force themselves back into the tie at the Etihad then on Tuesday night, does it make you rethink what Pep Guardiola is doing at Manchester City and what he's trying to achieve?
Not really, Nathan. You know, I've got my own take on it, and my take is that there's all the concentration is getting forward. We're going to have the ball more than the opposition. We're going to score goals. And I don't think there's much attention paid to defending at all because he doesn't expect to defend. Now, there's no balance to that. Now, when it happens for him, it's absolutely brilliant. And he's turned on brilliant performances most of the time this season. Last week, it's been a bad week for him. Manchester City, at Liverpool, they didn't turn up. First half against Liverpool, they were very good. First half against Manchester United, they were excellent. You wouldn't give Manchester United a prayer. But when it came, when it turned a little bit to have to defend, then they're very poor. So I think Guardiola is brave in what he does in attack, Nathan, but a bit naive, if that's the right word, when it comes to defending. He doesn't really believe that there's this balance. To, you know, in my opinion, all the great teams in the past, whether it be Manchester United and Liverpool, had really good defenders as well as good attackers. I think Guardiola is brave in many ways. This is what he believes in. I don't agree with all the way with what he does. But at the same time, when I read the papers this week, he's turned into a mug in the last week. You know, the papers, he was a genius up to last match. And Klopp, the opposite. Klopp was a bit of a mug a couple of weeks ago. Now he's a genius. That's the opinion of people changes. But I think with Guardiola, I think you're going to have a lot of what we've seen in the last week. you know, that this can happen to them at any particular time. But it'll rarely happen, though, Nathan. Now, if you look at their record this year at Liverpool, they're about 19 points ahead of Liverpool. They've conceded less goals than Liverpool. They've scored as many as Liverpool. But over the last week, Liverpool definitely have had the better of them. So what you get from Guardiola is this excellence at times and this poor defending at times. And in what he's thinking, in my opinion, we're going to score, and we won't be under pressure at any time. But it doesn't happen that way, as we've seen in the last week.
For so often we would talk about teams having their attack as the first line of their defence. It almost seems that Manchester City's defence is the first line of their attack.
Exactly. But you're explaining it better than me, Nathan.
but Guardiola seems to expect a huge amount from his defenders, and even when they're under pressure from attackers, he doesn't just want them to boot it clear to take the safe option. He wants them to take a risk. Is that something that is fine against Crystal Palace and the majority of teams in the Premier League and European football?
No, because he's done it against the best teams. You know, he's done it against Chelsea. He's done it against Manchester United, apart from the other match, apart from the first half. You know, he's done it against Spurs. He's played most of the teams off the pitch. So it does, like, I tell you, my take on it anyway, there's no halfway with the way he wants teams to play, Nathan. In other words, I've got confidence in you, you're going to do it. Now, if he starts saying, well, look, I want you to be a little bit careful there and a little bit careful there, then it takes away totally what he's really good at or wants. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you try to steady it up in a certain way, you'll ruin what they're really brilliant at times. So he doesn't believe in the balance, and he has to give that to the players all the time. I don't think there'll be any change in his approach. This is what he believes in. You know, he's running away, still way ahead in the Premiership. He's won the League Cup. He's won trophies doing things with his philosophy. I mean, there's certain things I love about him. I think he's brave in what he does. I don't always agree with that particular. I mean, I was brought up with a balance, you know. Like, if playing for Leeds United, we've great defenders in Jack Charlton and Norman Hunter, Paul Reaney and Terry Cooper and these guys. Guardiola doesn't believe in that. He believes we don't need that. If we keep on the ball, and there's only one ball on the pitch, and if we have it all the time, and we're scoring goals that we're capable of scoring, which has happened for most of the season, Nathan. It's only in the last week that he's had a really, really bad week, which can happen to him at any time. So we have to wait until the end of the season to see, well, where does he finish up, and is he going to change? I don't think he's going to change.
More I want to talk about Guardiola and Klopp and City and Liverpool before we wrap up in around 10-12 minutes time. 53106 is the text number. John's going to stay with us. If you have any text, we'll take a quick break.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back to Thursday's Off the Ball. John Giles is still on the line. We're talking about Liverpool, Manchester City. John, when you look at the way Liverpool performed over these two legs, and have performed at times this season, the way they beat Manchester City in the league back in January, and what Klopp has been able to do with a group of players, some of whom were unheralded, the likes of Andy Robertson, who's come in, even Mo Salah, who had done well last season at Roma, but nobody expected this with 39 goals so far. Is he the type of manager you look at and think, yeah, I would have liked to have played with him as a player. I would have got the best out of myself if he was my manager.
Well, I think he does get the best out of players, Nathan. There's no doubt about that. And he has this enthusiasm, he has this go. But Robertson has been one of the star players for him. And I think Van Dijk has made a difference. I mean, I've always described, well, when he came in, watching him, these teams, Klopp's teams, he was a one-trick pony with an excellent trick. And I still think that about him. I don't think there's going to. I did very well in the last couple of weeks, but is there going to be a consistency there that's needed? It's a bit like Guardiola. Now he's his go, attack. And actually, when he's put under pressure at the back, he's usually not very good. Now I think Van Dijk and Robertson in particular, who's come in from Moreno over a period of time, how he hasn't been in there before, I don't know. Has been a huge asset for them in recent times. But, you know, Liverpool are what they are. I mean, a few weeks ago, they were beaten by Swansea, don't forget, and West Brom beat them in the Cup. They can concede goals. It's a bit like Guardiola in terms of, I don't think there's any great emphasis on defence. I think there's more emphasis on defence with Klopp than there is with Guardiola. But there'd be much of a muchness in their approach, which is go, and have the players up front, which Klopp has. So don't forget, a few weeks ago, a lot of people were questioning him, Nathan. You know, is he doing it? I've heard him described as a bit of a clown and that. But again, he's capable of doing what he's done. He's done brilliantly in the last week against Manchester City. But is the consistency going to be there week in and week out in giving goals away? They've done well in the last couple of weeks, but I would still say that the defending has to be proven, or the good defending has to be proven yet.
Can you do that by signing good defenders? Is that what he's done here, maybe, even if they're not doing any more work with the defensive structure, in signing Virgil van Dijk, spending the $75 million, making him the world's most expensive defender, that they've actually bought a leader of that defence who can make everybody better and actually can change the entire team, that they're not just this one-trick pony anymore, that simply by signing Van Dijk, they're going to be a lot stronger defensively and give them a far stronger base?
Well, he's definitely the best defender they've had. You know, if you look at Lovren and one of the others, he's definitely better than any of them. But I think at Robertson coming in at fullback, and he's been there a long time, Robertson, where he wasn't in the team at all, has definitely been a help. But it's been a really good week for Liverpool. There's no doubt, Nathan. But I think even still defensively, they're not as good as they should be. Mm. But anyway, they can only go in the last week, which is very, very good. But you must remember, over the season, now Van Dijk has been there a while. They've conceded more goals than Manchester City. They've scored about the same goals as Manchester City. You know what I mean? So they've definitely deserve to beat Manchester City 5-1, which is a great result, and it's been a really, really good week for them. I'd need more convincing about emphasis on defending in the future than at the moment, Nathan. I wouldn't be that sure about it.
You think it might still catch up with them before the end of this tournament?
Yes.
I want to talk to you as well about one of the more interesting stories of the week, which was Harry Kane and this ghost goal, as it's been described in some ways, for Spurs against Stoke, originally given to Christian Eriksen, but the Premier League's goal accreditation appeals panel have overturned the decision. So Harry Kane now stands on 25 goals, 4 behind Mo Salah. Is this just a sign of the real desire you want from your striker, a desperation to get goals, that he'll sort of put himself out there publicly and show that desperation?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm amazed at. I'm amazed at the importance of it, to be quite honest, Nathan, between the leading goal scorer. You know, what you want is the team to be doing well and everybody to be winning things regardless of a personal situation where you're scoring goals more than... Now, that's the way it is today. I'm a bit old-fashioned in that way. But I did follow it. I did see the replays of the goal, and it's very, very hard to know. But what I would be amazed at, if Harry Kane didn't tell the truth. I think he's a decent lad. He's not a show-off. I think he's very good. And if he told me that he got a little touch on it, I'd believe him.
Right.
I'd really believe him. I would be amazed if he told Whoppers, overscored and are making the contact with that ball. Because what I saw of it, it's only the player would know whether he got a little brush on the ball. But I'm amazed at the so much publicity about it. So he scored or he didn't score, or if he's a leading goal scorer or not the leading goal scorer, so what? But again, I'd be amazed if he didn't really believe that he got a touch on it, Nathan.
Was there not always that desire there from a club's main striker to get every goal possible? Winning the golden boot at the end of the season,
to be quite honest.
No?
No, there would be more talk among the team and the player himself. Are we going to win the title with it?
The personal accolades.
How important is it to the team for winning things? You know, Harry Kane could be the leading goal scorer this season and win nothing. So could Salah. So I'm just surprised. I know things have changed over the years, Nathan, but I'm surprised at the importance of it to be the leading goal scorer. Of course, Harry Kane wants to be the leading goal scorer. And Salah wants to be there. But the main thing is the team winning. And scoring goals had to help the team to win. And not making a hullabaloo about whether he did or he didn't touch it. You know?
Spurs came out and were pretty public as well, and they're backing for Harry Kane. So you have to assume that the dressing room dynamic with Christian Eriksen is all right as well, that Christian Eriksen isn't sitting in the corner seething.
To be honest, Aiden, you know what I mean? Whether Harry Kane was the leading goal scorer or not, in my opinion, anyway, if Spurs scored a goal and it was allowed, and Ericsson wasn't given the goal, there'd be no hullabaloo about it.
Mm.
You know, and Harry Kane, as I said, I think Harry Kane is a terrific lad. I think he's an honest lad. And if he said he got a touch on it, then I would believe him. But I don't understand the hullabaloo about it, to be honest.
We were talking earlier about the 1970 FA Cup final, which you say I think was even more hardcore than the European Cup semi-final against Barcelona. I'm looking forward to going back and watching it.
Oh, have a look at it
this
have
evening.
A
we have a text in about it.
Don't expect to go to sleep as soon as you watch this, you know?
Did you have nightmares about it for a while afterwards?
I've had nightmares about losing.
Did you ever walk off the pitch after that Cup final? Did you ever walk off the pitch annoyed with the behaviour of your opponents?
Oh, no. Sure, we were just as bad as them. Oh, no, there was never, it's like Harry Kane, we've never complained about the behaviour of other teams. That's the way it was in those days.
Yeah.
You know, and there was huge rivalry between, and that this was a replay as well. Actually, it was the first replay ever of the FA Cup final.
All right.
And it was played at Old Trafford, it wasn't played at Wembley. So there was a few historical changes there. But
why didn't they play the, because the original game was played at Wembley, why didn't they play the replay at Wembley? Why didn't they play the replay at Wembley?
I don't know. Actually, the game at Wembley actually was the first time it went into extra time as well, Nathan.
So a pretty historic game all around. And we've a text in about that. One of the most forgotten Irish players ever was the wonderful John Dempsey, who scored a classic goal for Chelsea to win the European Cup Winners' Cup against Real Madrid. I wonder if he played with John, that from Jeff Clashmore in County Waterford.
Oh, yeah. I played with John quite a few times, the international team. John was a really good lad. One of the old-fashioned centre-halves. Wasn't expected to do much on the ball, but as they say, he used to say in those, getting his foot in,
Have been in Pep Guardiola's team.
He wouldn't take John Dempsey for granted. Him and Chopper Harris playing at the back for Chelsea. and John was a real old-fashioned, go for the ball, go for anything that was there, brave. Now he's a really good lad, and it was great to play with him in the Irish team.
Yeah, I'm starting to see now why the 70 Cup final was so good with Dempsey and Chopper Harris on one side and Jack Charlton and Norman Hunter on the other side.
Oh, definitely. Just have a look at it, Nathan. You can mention it next week when we're talking.
Yeah, and still alive and well, John Dempsey, 72 years young,
good.
19 caps from 66 to 72. John, great stuff as always. Thanks a lot for taking the call.
Thanks, Nathan.
We'll talk to you next week. John Giles, as always, with us every Thursday evening at 7:30. You can get your text into 53106. Kev will be back in a minute. The Europa League game's just getting underway. And in the next hour, we're going to be talking to the Footballer of the Year, Andy Moran.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.